Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
He's the man Talkers Magazine says is one of the most important talk show hosts in America.
We tell you over and over again that you're wonderful, and you just don't get it. What's wrong with you?
He's Jim Blasingame, our small business advocate.
We're back. It's 34 after the hour. Thanks very much for joining me. Thanks for hanging out with me. My pleasure to continue to be with you, and you're going to be glad you stayed with me, too, because we've got Michael Cox back on the show. Mike is a longtime member of our Brain Trust, a good friend of ours. He's now the new director of the O'Neill Center for Global Markets and Freedom at the Cox School of Business at SMU, Southern Methodist University. He's a senior fellow at the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas, formerly the chief economist. I guess you don't have that title anymore, do you, Mike?
That's right, Jim. And good morning.
How you doing?
I'm not chief economist anymore.
Yeah, well, it's good to have you here. I'm excited about your new gig there at SMU, and I think the world is going to be a better place because you're out in the marketplace helping to promote entrepreneurship and free markets. Michael, today the Fed is wrapping up a two-day meeting. They do this a couple of times a year. They have a two-day meeting in addition to a half dozen one-day meetings. And the Federal Open Market Committee is the group that's meeting today, and which is comprised of the 12 bank presidents, Fed bank presidents, the chairman, the vice chairman, and the five governors, right?
Exactly.
Makes up about 19 people altogether, and only 12 of which vote on what they think they're going to do with monetary policy. And those are the folks who decide, even though everybody weighs in on the debate, only 12 vote on whether they're going to raise rates or lower rates or keep them about the same. And that will be discussed today. Now, rates currently are a quarter of a point on the Fed funds rate. And Mike, that's a historic low, isn't it?
Well, yes, it is. Well, an eighth of a point, I believe, is a historic low.
Was that?
And that's right. It's an interesting time we're in. It probably won't ever be repeated, and let's hope it's not anyway.
Yeah. Of course, the Fed felt that they had to make those kind of drastic cuts back in the fall when we were having such a scary time in the economy, didn't they?
Yes, well, what was happening, the Fed has two objectives given to it by Congress. Really, it ought to just have one, but now it was given two. And the second one that it was given was to stimulate economic growth, and that's why the interest rate was lowered. Of course, that eventually can cause inflation, mm-hmm. but right now we're more worried about economic growth than inflation.
Their primary job, though, is price stability, isn't it?
Absolutely, because that's the only thing that only the Fed can do, really. The price level ultimately goes back to the number of pieces of paper in the economy, money relative to goods, and only the Fed can control that.
Well, and as they stand there at a quarter point on the Fed funds rate, mm-hmm. they can't go much lower, and so they're of course raising rates would be sending a signal that the economy might be overheating, and that they're concerned about inflation. So that's probably not going to happen. So really, in terms of rates, there's not much going to happen. That's what my prediction is. What do you think?
I think that's right. They would not, in my opinion, under any circumstances, raise rates in this meeting. It's just not the right time. But now, paradoxically, though, if we could get rates up, banks would probably lend more because mm-hmm. we're in a situation where nobody wants to lend at these interest rates. When believing that certainly interest rates are going to be higher in the future, why not wait?
Mm-hmm.
Because you can have, first of all, you just don't get as good a rate of return on your money, but also you can endure capital losses once the rate starts to rise.
Right, right. Well, so basically, what is there to meet about? What will they be talking about today?
Other things that need to be done. I mean, there's so much more to monetary policy these days than just the Fed funds rate.
It's a lot more than it used to be, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, the size of the Fed portfolio has tripled from $850 billion a couple of years ago to $2.3 trillion today.
Mm-hmm.
What the Fed holds has changed from being almost entirely Treasury securities to being Treasury securities and, innumerable other things, part of which are private. And actually, I think in the long run, nobody's talked about this. But I think in the long run, some of this is going to be good for the economy, because the Fed was really initially started not to buy government securities and subsidize the purchases of debt issued by government. When the Fed was originally started in 1913, we were started under principle of what's called the real bills doctrine. I say we, I'm talking like I'm still at the Fed. But the Fed was originally supposed to buy private securities, commercial paper of large companies, and wind up owning government, not government debt, but private debt, and that way would subsidize companies.
So they were buying bonds, basically, from companies.
Right. Uh-huh. It's 100 years ago, roughly, when the Fed deemed that we needed an increase in liquidity in a part of the country such as San Francisco, which might be growing rapidly,
right,
they would go into that part of the company and buy commercial paper.
Very interesting. Things have changed, folks, and it's changed rapidly and significantly in the last 10 years at the Fed. We'll take a quick break. We're going to talk about this some more and what Mike thinks about the economy. How's it doing? Right after these messages, here's Celine Dion to take us out.
Started walking, couldn't stop, turning it over.
We're back at 17 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Thanks very much for hanging out with me. My pleasure is to continue to be with you. My website is smallbusinessadvocate.com. Thank you for using it. Thank you for taking advantage of all the things that we've made available to you there. And don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter. Check out my blog. By the way, my new blog post is an analogy of Star Wars, Star Trek, and social media. So I think you'll enjoy it. It's called May the Social Media Force Be With You. So check that out. And if you want to follow me on Twitter, I'm at Jim Blasingame. Michael Cox is our guest. He's director of the O'Neill Center for Global Markets and Freedom. I love that title. At the Cox School of Business at Southern Methodist University. And he's still a senior fellow at the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas. Now, the Cox School of Business is not, that's not the Michael Cox School of Business, is it?
No, it's not my dad.
So
not even related for that matter.
So, Michael, we're talking about what the Fed's doing. We both agree they're not going to change anything this time, but they are talking about some issues. They are talking about some of the things that are going on. And you were telling us when we went to the break that the Fed used to buy private debt, meaning or corporate debt, I should say, but they haven't in decades. But now are they doing that again now?
Yeah, well, commercial paper. Here's what the Fed was founded to be able to, control the price level and give a stable means of currency, but that money was supposed to get into the economy by the Fed purchasing commercial paper of large companies, so that if you were in California, San Francisco growing rapidly, and so there was a lot of competition for the funds, the government would go in there to liquidify the market, would buy commercial paper, put money into the economy.
And so if banks weren't giving
room for the little ones to grow.
So if banks weren't adding enough capital, the government would go in and augment that.
Right. Now, what happened in the First World War is that the Treasury couldn't sell its war bonds, so they came to the Fed, made the Fed buy the bonds, and the Fed got involved out of the commercial paper market temporarily and into buying them with cash. In other words, we started buying Treasury securities,
and
we never recovered from that. So up until, 2 or 3 years ago, the entire portfolio of the Fed was almost government securities. So there's one thing that's good about this, and it's getting the Fed back out of the, by subsidizing and helping the government issue their loans, but helping the private sector. And also, that should offer you in the long term that better rates of return on your investments.
What does that mean for small business? How does that trickle down to a small business?
Well, it's easier to, if you were to stack, interest rates from the very top, the most difficult things to borrow, which would be probably small businesses, down to the easiest people who can borrow, and that's the Treasury securities.
Right.
There's a giant gap between the Treasury security rates and the small business rates.
Right.
So if
small
you move
business
on up
owners
in that spectrum up to the privates and get into some of the commercial paper, it makes it easier for the Fed to lower small business interest rates.
Mm-hmm. Well, as long as the Fed keeps rates low, that makes, right, currently prime is 3.25%, and small business owners, as I've said many times, Mike, small business owners don't live in the world of prime. They live in the world of prime plus. Prime
That's
plus
right.
one, prime
That's
plus
right.
two, three, four, and the dreaded prime plus five. But even at prime plus five, it's only 8%, which is a lot, but it's a number that small business owners can live with, because every small business has to pay too much for their capital. Mm-hmm. It's just expensive. Capital for a small business is expensive, and it's just the way it is. It's not because, as you know, the Blasingame third law of small business states that it's redundant to say undercapitalized small business, and it's just something we live with. So let's talk about the Fed's not going to do much now. Mike, should they be a little more worried about inflation than they are? Are they on the horns of a dilemma between concern for growth of the economy and also concern for inflation?
Not yet. There's only one primary concern right now, and that's economic growth.
Yeah.
And the reason that all this increase in base money, all this tripling of the monetary base is not converted into inflation yet is banks aren't lending out the loans. The money that they're making loans with, the money the Fed puts in there. So the actual money supply is a multiple of base money, and that multiple started shrinking as banks held back and did not loan out the money. It shrank so much that the Fed could not keep the money supply from falling at first.
But there's another element to this, Mike. You're talking about banks aren't lending money, and I'm sure there are plenty of people out there. I know some people who are having trouble getting money out of banks, but they're at the higher levels. Small businesses are not demanding loans from banks. The surveys that I've been reporting on show that small businesses are not demanding. I talk to a number of independent community banks every so often, every month or so, Mike, and they're telling me that they got money to lend, but the small business owners are not coming in.
Well, I mean, some of that's true. Some of it's, you know, they're shifting the blame from themselves over to the small businesses. But I do agree with you. In this economy, people aren't comfortable going out and borrowing the money and getting themselves in debt without being sure that they can generate the income to pay the loan.
It's been fascinating to see America go from a highly leveraged mindset to a complete deleveraging mindset. And the brakes that's been put on we're feeling it right now, aren't we?
We are. And in the long run, of course, the people are better off if they save some portion of their money than spend a few extra nickels every dollar, too. But the short run transition is difficult.
What do you think is going to happen? You think we're going to evolve back into some kind of more reasonable, more healthy middle ground?
Absolutely. Yes, I think people have been scarred by this enough to where their behaviors are permanently changed. It's not a change in living standards. Our living standards will continue to raise, go up, but it's definitely a change in lifestyles.
And risk attitude and attitude about leverage, and you know, as much as I obviously didn't want this to happen, we've got one or two generations of people out there who've never been through anything like this, and this has been probably a pretty good wake up call for some of the folks who are say under 40, maybe even 45. We'll take a quick break. It's 10 till. When we come back, we're going to get Mike to tell us what he sees coming up in the economy over the next 6 months to 12 months. 10 till. Stay with us.
When I was a young boy, slipping away those young boy ways. Now that I'm getting old.
We're back at 7 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're having a great visit with our good friend Michael Cox. He's the director of the O'Neill Center for Global Markets and Freedom at SMU, Southern Methodist University, at the business school there. Michael, give us the website and tell us a little bit about your organization.
Well, it's O'NeillCenter.com, O-N-E-I-L-Center.com. And what we do is we're a free market think tank and an action tank to try to help recover the economy back to a more capitalist environment.
And you're doing that by, are you helping, are you doing this through educating students, helping?
Number one, educating students. We teach students how to do business in a globalized world, teach them about the benefits of markets and freedom and how to, what's right and what's wrong with government policy and what to do about it. We also get out and do a lot of public speaking, go on radio, go on television, write newspaper articles, New York Times, Wall Street Journal, Investors, Business Daily, and just a whole list of other things in every way we can to become active and trying to restore American capitalism to the very thing that made this country great.
Absolutely.
Try to get the government sized down, be reasonable, try to educate people on where does progress come from. It comes from ordinary people, small businesses and so on, who get up every day just to try to make a living for themselves and their family. It doesn't come from government. You know, government doesn't put a chicken in everybody's pot. It's the private sector that does, and everything else to boot.
Well, and I've been trying to get more and more small business owners to understand that the votes that you take, the votes that you make, have an impact on your small business. And
well, the letters you write, Jim, do you know Congress treats every letter they get as 50,000 votes?
Yeah.
And so we do some of that. We do some letter writing, and we do an awful lot of just educating the public, not just in school, but in every place that we can.
Right. Well, part of my charter since I started doing my show was to talk about public policy that impacts small business, and that's what we've been doing ever since. Mike, talk to us about the economy. How do you see the economy over the next 6 months and 12 months?
Slow. It's a check mark. I think, you know, people talk, is this a V? What kind of a shape is this? Is it a U? I think it's a check mark. It's pretty fast down and pretty slow back up. And there's going to be a lot of instability along the way, too, because we have so many policies we got to reorder and get right, especially credit and lending policies and policies to restore trust. People that need to have trust in the regulators if they're going to come up with the right rules and do their job and enforcing them. That was the problem over the past 10 or 15 years. The regulators just kind of went away, and the thieves came back out and exactly what they'll always
right.
do, and now we've destroyed trust. And rebuilding trust is not something that happens overnight. I hate to use this analogy, but how long, if somebody sleeps around on their spouse, how
right.
long does it take before they get confidence restored?
Right.
It doesn't happen.
It takes this trust thing. There's so many of our institutions that we've lost. Not only the literal institution like Bear Stearns and Lehman and those organizations that either have gone broke or been nationalized. Our U.S. automobile companies. Look
right.
what's going on with them.
Yeah.
But between that and the unemployment rate that's still rising a little bit. And something that's completely new in my lifetime, Mike, in your lifetime, really, and that's the drop in credit availability for consumers. I mean, that we've never seen this before, like right now. So you add that on there. So in my opinion, and all I'm saying, folks, we're just being honest here. This isn't going to be, 2010 is not going to be off to the races.
People used to use debt, some people, to motivate themselves. They would go out and put themselves in debt, and then they realize, I got these mortgage payments to make and these other bills to pay, and then they would work extra hard to do that. That's kind of like running on steroids. You might work harder, but you don't do it. But now that the baby boom has aged to the point where they're in their 50s and they've seen a lot of their wealth come down, the people I'm talking to who have money in society today, which are that older generation, they're not going to do that anymore.
Right.
They have a completely different portfolio that they want today than they did yesterday. They're not going to lend the way they used to. They're happy lending to government.
And a deleveraged American economy is going to be a slower recovering economy, isn't it?
It'd be slower recovery, but in the long run, what happens is that you wind up with a stronger economy. If we can get the government back out of our pocketbooks.
How are we going to do that, Mike?
It's going to be through education again. That's exactly why I decided it's time to go to work for the Center for Global Markets and Freedom. We got to educate people one at a time, 100 at a time, everyone we can, just like Reagan did. Reagan taught us a lot, and so we need to go back to that. We don't know what Abominomics means yet.
Yeah.
We just hope it's not, honestly, we hope it's not an abomination.
Yeah. Hey, Mike, give us that website one more time.
It's O'NeillCenter.com, or you can go to smu.edu and just root around through there and get to the center that way.
Thanks, Mike.
An upcoming conference, October 16th.
We'll be talking more on that. You'll be back on between now and then. Thanks for being here, Mike. Thanks for the hard work you're doing.
Thank you, Jim.
We'll see you next time. Michael Cox, ladies and gentlemen. I got to go for this hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, reminding you that when opportunity knocks, it doesn't know you've had a bad day. Greet it with a smile.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.